Game On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Hello, you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM on this Tuesday night. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Keep this to yourselves. It's not confirmed. Don't tell anyone. The rumour is that Henry Shefflin might be calling it a day tomorrow. Press conference called for Kilkenny. We'll have our team of hotshot reporters down there. We'll talk to Eddie Brennan in a few minutes' time. We're going to hear all the latest from the Republic of Ireland camp ahead of Poland on Sunday. Massive match in the European qualifiers. Carlo Cudicini on joining Noel King's under-21s. We'll also talk to Barry Geraghty after that fall at Downpatrick on Sunday and what that means for him over the next 6 or 7 weeks or so. And Gary Murphy is here to discuss all things golf and everything else besides. How are you, Gary?
Very well, Hugh.
I'm going to ask you about King Henry in just a second as a proud Kilkenny man and also a hurling fan, but I want to give a big shout out to our Aviva fan studio this Thursday night ahead of the Republic of Ireland against Poland in that European qualifier that I mentioned. We have some brilliant guests in the studio on that Thursday. Brian Kerr, Graham Kavanagh, Mark Kinsler and Alan Cawley, among others. So if you want to get involved, if you want to come down, there'll be a tour of the stadium. There'll be a couple of drinks on offer as well, a little bit of food and some brilliant conversation with the lads. Just text in 51552 Aviva and your name and your phone number, and obviously we'll ring you back. The Aviva Fan Studio this Thursday night. You want to come along. It's a brilliant night. I can guarantee that. And hopefully we'll see you then. 51552 if you want to get involved. But, Gary, King Henry is abdicating his throne. We were bandying around headlines today. Chef special. Henry steps down. There was worse ones than that, yeah. I can tell you. But listen, your thoughts overall on the greatest ever hurler to play the game.
By far, he's won 10 All-Irelands, but he's won from schools hurling all the way to Croke Park, and he's won 54 different medals, 20 individual honours. He's only second, actually, in all-time scoring in All-Ireland Finals after the great Eddie Kerr. 93 points in All-Ireland Finals. He's averaged in his career just under 8 points per game. Astonishing.
You know, me and Henry Shefflin have a lot in common.
You both have our.
Just as you were reeling off the list of accolades that he won there, it just occurred to me that we have so much in common. We both have red hair.
Yep.
And we both went to Waterford IT around the same time. We won a Fitzgibbon Cup when he was there, actually, and I was there as well. And you didn't play hurling now, but.
And you both drive a Lexus.
We both drive Lexi, plural, the Japanese Mercedes, as Mr. Partridge would say. But look. On a serious note, I mean, you grew up obviously as a Kilkenny fan and as a massive hurling fan, and you know, will we ever see his like again?
Well, the funny thing was, I mean, when I stopped playing, I obviously had more time to go see Kilkenny play more often, and living in Beltray, Croke Park is not a million miles away, so it was a huge part of my summer, and it was a joy. You know, I think it's a kind of bit like Brian O'Driscoll in rugby. It's just a, you know, people, George Hook always goes on about Jack Kyle, but like, we were around for O'Driscoll, and in hurling terms, we've been around for Henry Shefflin. Mm. And it's been an honour, really, to watch him play. And obviously, the last few years, injuries have blighted his appearances. But I mean, he's undoubtedly the greatest ever hurler, I think, that's ever played the game. And it's been an honour to see it live.
It's an honour to have Eddie Brennan with us. Hi, Eddie.
How are you doing, Hugh?
Listen, as someone who soldiered, fought and triumphed with Henry Shefflin for so many years, what kind of words would you use to describe him?
It's hard to know, really, Hugh. You know, with the influx of Kilkenny retirements, you're kind of talking about a lot of fellas, but look, definitely there's a special place for Henry Shefflin. For me, you know, I've been fortunate enough to share a dressing with a lot of these great players, but Henry, I think, stood out for the simple reason was, and I don't mean this in any slant, he mightn't be probably the most naturally gifted hurler that was there, but he was undoubtedly the most dedicated, hard-working player I've ever come across. He just, he stopped at nothing to be the best. A few years ago, he was at the Ballygown Sports Awards, and you know, I was asked to speak about Henry, and I think, you know, as someone who's read a lot of books on, you know, world sports stars, I think he's right up there with any of them, simply because the big player, the best player, will deliver when the stakes are the highest, and the expectation is at the greatest, and when a match is there to be won. And Henry has done that so many times, and the one occasion that really springs to mind for me is the 2009 All-Ireland, when we got the penalty. You know, I was close enough to him, and I recall him saying, what am I going to do? And I kind of said, well, I'm glad it's you who's going to have to do it, not me, in my own head, because I didn't fancy it. But I think Henry relished that. He loved being in the pressure situations where something like that was expected of him, because he trained so hard that he almost embraced the pressure in them occasions. And I mean, that day he stepped up to that penalty knowing nothing less than a goal was needed, and he took it on, and he had the backbone to take that on, and he'd done that so many times. We were fortunate enough to see him up close and personal in training. He wasn't a huge speaker, but he always led by his actions on the pitch, and that for me, I think any young lad that you ask to show him examples, say come in and watch Henry Shefflin. He was on the field at 7:15 when we were starting training at 7:30, poking balls over the bar. That's how dedicated he was, and that was what I seen in the training field in Kilkenny. That's not to mention what the man was doing behind the scenes that none of the rest of us seen.
Well, that's it, because I wanted to ask you about that drive and determination that you've been talking about there. I mean, you know, to hear him being interviewed, to see him, I suppose, in his dealings with the media and his dealings with fans, on the chances that I have, he just seems like a very amiable, very approachable, very decent kind of guy, but yet, you know, somewhere inside him, he couldn't have done what he has done without this insatiable appetite to win and this just ferocious determination.
Yeah, and I think what you really have to throw into that, and Gary touched on it there a few minutes ago, he came back from countless serious injuries, two cruise ships, AC joint on the shoulder. I mean, the last two or three years, the body was just starting to let him down, but I think he came back. He came back every time, and I was fortunate enough not to pick up any injuries. And I can just imagine how much training, how much stuff behind the scenes that he had to do to get himself right. And that was one thing, you know, we heard stories of him running up and down the cornfield at the back of his house when he was trying to get himself back in shape. And that will be the thing with him. But look, he was always Henry. He never became, you know, this too big for any of us in the dressing room. He was the same Henry that I went to school with in St. Kieran's, always through it. Yes, there was huge expectation of him. I think, you know, I'd say for him going for a bite to eat around Kilkenny or anywhere like that, I mean, he's a nationally recognisable fellow. So that must have been difficult, but he just carried it off well. He took it in his stride. He passed himself with people, and you know, with everything that he'd done, he still was the same Henry Shefflin that I joined the panel with in 2000 as he was when I left it in 2011. And I think that's the big thing with him. He's comfortable in his own skin. And as I said, it'll be certainly an end of an era.
Yeah, Eddie, Mike has texted us in to say, Hugh, Henry could turn up tomorrow and tell us all he's going to go on for another year. I mean, he could do that. This is not absolutely confirmed, but we were discussing this earlier and we were saying, you know, if Henry Shefflin was to call a press conference and say he was going to play with Kilkenny for another year, Brian Cody would drag him by the ears into the squad and do something about it. So look, we're just preempting, I suppose, what it looks like. And after last weekend with Ballyhale and the season he's had and the injuries that Gary and yourself have mentioned there, you know, it does look like that this is the end, but it's, you know, confirmed.
Yeah, it's inevitable, like you said, Hugh. I don't think he'd be calling across a press conference to say he's staying on. You know, I think you know, I'd have to say I'm jealous of the man that he's in a position where he can walk away having won a club All Ireland. It's a special thing for him. I mean, what a way to go. And and the one thing, look, Brian Cody will certainly salute him and certainly acknowledge, you know, Henry's contribution, particularly on days when maybe the rest of it didn't fire. Henry single-handedly pulled us out of matches, and he was never afraid to put his body on the line. But certainly, look, Brian will say, look, the show will go on, and I think, you know, Henry Shefflin will say that too. That look, it's going to be a very special day. It's going to be a unique year. We'll remember, look, when Henry Shefflin, you know, maybe walked away from the county setup, but I've no doubt he's probably going to tip along with the club for another few years.
Yeah, brilliantly put. Listen, Eddie, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all, Hugh.
Super stuff. Eddie Brennan there, somebody who obviously knows Henry inside out, has soldiered with him, as I said, played with him so many times, and got to see, you know, it's always fascinating for me, even just on a general level in sport. You think you know lads, but then you go into a dressing room with them and you go out onto the pitch and you actually see what some lads are made of and what some lads aren't. And And to have that kind of experience for even for Eddie and the lads of being together and seeing each other in that situation. The greatest ever hurling team, I think, over the last 10, 15 years, this Kilkenny team and what they've done.
Yeah, it's undoubtedly the greatest hurling team of all time under the Cody era, and you could probably pick two or three teams within those wins. And, you know, it's all good things come to an end. That's the funny thing about sport and age is probably gotten the better of him, but he's given so much, and as Eddie said, he did it so unassuming as well. No, like, you look at some of the Premiership footballers, the way they behave, and Mario Balotelli and the rubbish that goes on with some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was in the Premiership, or if he was a soccer player, he's Lionel Messi or Ronaldo, and there's not a word about him. He's behaved like an absolute gentleman throughout his career and performed all the time.
My wife works in the bank where Henry does, and she'd see him quite often. And exactly what you just said, just the nicest lad. You go up, shake anyone's hand, no problem. You wouldn't ever know that he'd done anything special outside of the role that he's in while he's in it. But then I suppose he puts on the boots and goes out onto the pitch, and some lads just grow 10 feet taller. And even just for lads who would have lined up against him. You know, those Tipperary fans texting us in, Ian Kieran says, tongue in cheek, thank God King Henry's gone, because,
absolutely,
you know, he stuck fear into opposition teams all over the country.
He did, and he was so honest about it as well. And I think that's the big legacy that Cody has left, or is leaving. You know, he's basically creating men and human beings and people. And as a byproduct of that, you know, they become great hurlers. But and you look at soccer, it's the other way around, you know.
Yeah, it is.
And that's why I think, even though, because we all have our own counties, you know, I'm sure all the lads down in Tip, and I get plenty of slagging on Twitter from them and give a bit back, and it's all good banter, but I think universally there's huge respect for the spirit of the Kilkenny team, even though, you know, you obviously want your team to beat them, but they're, and he's been the linchpin, he's been the main guy, but totally unassuming. And I presume the announcement tomorrow is not to say he's going training tomorrow night, so we presume it's come to an end. And as Eddie said, it's so true. It's so, so special to go out with the club championship. Is, you know, because as Brian Cody always says this, you know, that inter-county hurling is the gravy, but the real stuff is your club, and he's won three All-Irelands with them and matched up the Fenley area, you know, because the Fenleys, back in my day when I was growing up, they were the...
That's the Fenleys in Kilkenny, by the way, not the Fenleys in Laois that I'm married into. equally good sporting talents. Eamon, if you're listening, driving home. Not bad for the old Port Laois there. Henry Shefflin. We're going to wait for that press conference tomorrow, obviously, and we will talk more about it on tomorrow night's show. But for the time being, I don't think we can say much more than we have done already. Okay, we're going to move on, because Republic of Ireland manager Martin O'Neill has been left sweating, I suppose, over James McLean ahead of Sunday's Euro 2016 qualifier against Poland. He's limped out of training at Gannon Park today with his left ankle pretty heavily strapped. He was taken for a scan. Now, O'Neill says that was precautionary, but we'll have to wait and see what happens as the week progresses. Elsewhere, bit of an interesting battle going on for the starting goalkeeper jersey. Two contenders, obviously, Shea Given and David Ford, and they've been speaking to our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue.
Every week you've got to go and perform, and perform to your best and from your best capabilities, and at the end of the day, all you can do is do your best. So yeah, that's what I got to do, like, you know. So coming into Sunday, you know, it's the manager's decision at the end of the day, and who plays.
But David, you're the man in charge of the number one shirt. It's your shirt, so do you feel that you have to fight for it still?
Yeah, well, all I can do is just keep performing, just control what I do, like, you know, and that's all I can do, really, you know, and the rest is down to the manager and coaches and whatever they feel would be the best way forward. And
Shea's made it clear, though, that he wants to play.
Yeah, well, obviously, he's entitled to do that, like, you know what I mean, and what he's done for the country, and I've a lot of admiration for the man, like, you know what I mean. He's been one of the best players for the country, like, you know what I mean. So it's great that I've been playing the last couple of years or whatever, and you know, long will that continue.
Would you like it if the manager came out before Sunday and said that I'm sticking with David as my number one?
Doesn't really bother me, like, you know, I'll just still prepare as if I'm playing, and even if I'm not, you know, I'll still prepare. You never know, first minute you could be on, so that's where you got to be as a professional footballer, and just focused and concentrated on the job ahead.
David Ford there. Harry Arter is obviously someone we've had on the show recently enough, and scoring goals for fun at Bournemouth at the moment. They're top of the championship. Hammered Middlesbrough 3-0 last Friday night, and Harry's just in brilliant form. He also spoke to Tony on his experience of life in the Ireland camp.
I've been picked because, you know, the manager was impressed with the way I play. So if I come here any different and not confident, then, you know, I wouldn't show the best of my ability. So he just said, you know, be yourself, and, you know, that's what you picked for.
How would you describe your own form at the moment?
I'm pleased with my form. You know, as I say, I'm part of a team that's top of the league, and, you know, all things are going well. So, you know, my main goals when I play is to be a positive influence on the team, and, you know, try and be part of a successful team. And, you know, at the moment we are, so all in all, good.
And scoring a lot of goals at the moment.
Well, I say a lot. I've scored, you know, last two games. I was on a bit of a goal drought before that, so I usually score in numbers. I usually go 2, 3, 4, and then have a little break. So hopefully the next game I'll score another.
Well, hopefully that next game is for Ireland, if that's the case. I mean, he's been playing brilliant, Harry, for Bournemouth. And yeah, I just think we need a player like him, a bit of excitement, a nice touch as well, you know, just to liven up the team and give us that creative option in midfield that maybe has been lacking over the last while.
It does. It needs a bit of freshening up. I wouldn't say we're kind of flogging the same old guys, but just something different, a bit of fresh blood. And if he's, you know, scoring in the Championship, that's pretty top class form. Bournemouth are doing really well.
Yeah.
And might possibly go up, because Middlesbrough, I mean, that guy, the manager at Middlesbrough, who's ex, I think it was Real Madrid, it was your Barcelona assistant, and he's gone there and done a fantastic job, and they have a good chance going up too. So Bournemouth are
they're flying it, yeah.
They're flying, and he's performing for them, and that's top level football.
Speaking of new blood, former Chelsea goalkeeper Carlo Cudicini confirmed his joining Noel King's Republic of Ireland under-21s coaching team earlier today, ahead of that European qualifier against Andorra on Thursday. Now, I caught up with him a little bit earlier, and I first asked him, how did this happen, and what did Noel say to him?
Simply, he asked me if I was available, and if I wanted to, you know, to be their goalkeeper coach for the under-21 for this tournament. So we'll I have a few commitments here and there. So I said I'm more than happy to come and join him for this game, and then obviously maybe we sit down and we have a chat about the future. But I guess. For me, I mean, it was a no-brainer. For me, it's such an honor, first of all, to be here with the FAI and as I said, with Noel and Harry. So for this game, it was absolutely a no-brainer. Now for the future, we need to probably sit down and see if we can plan something together.
Have you seen a lot of talent in what's there in the under-21 squad at the moment as regards the goalkeepers? Have you had a chance to look at them?
Well, to be fair, not much, because it's something that happened quite quick. Obviously, I know the guys, and I have a few infos about them. But tonight we're gonna have the first training session. So obviously, I will take a good look at the two guys and the defense.
Yeah, and for them, I'm just trying to imagine, I mean, when they hear that Carlo Cudicini is coming in to coach them, they must be over the moon. I mean, someone of your experience and, you know, your success over the years is fantastic to have a guy like you involved with their training and coaching.
Well, I guess it's you know, it goes in both ways. Hopefully, I will. I mean, I'll do my best to pass on whatever I learn and in my career and my experience. Hopefully, will be good for them, and it will be obviously something that they will you know, take advantage of. And for me, it's the same, because obviously for me is one of my first. Experience as a coach, and so I will learn a lot from them too as well.
Do you remember yourself at that age, about 20 years of age, and wanting to learn from the best that there is? And, you know, do you have fond memories of coaches perhaps that might have influenced you at that time?
Oh, yes, of course. Obviously, you know, when still I think that still, you know, when you are around 20, 19, 21, is still you know, in an age where you have a lot to learn, and I do remember obviously the coach that I had in my career, and especially when I was a teenager growing up. You know, obviously I managed, and I was lucky enough to have great coaches, goalkeeper coaches that were able to tell me a lot of things about goalkeeping, and I was lucky enough to, you know, to get a bit of everybody, and it's not, I don't think it's it would be correct to name one or two, or everyone had a big part in my career. And so I hope that I can, you know, pass along whatever I learn, whatever I use in my career, and hopefully, you know, Ian and Daniel will take something out of me as well.
Of course, yeah, and of course, even just remembering your dad as well, Fabio, I presume he had such a crucial role as well in your development as a youngster. You mentioned your wife at B license, Carlo, and if I'm right in thinking that Robbie Keane was with you when you did that license, is that right?
Actually, no, it wasn't me in January, but obviously when I did the course in May, he was in America, so we didn't do the course together. But when I did my assessment in January, he was there doing his budget. So we spent, you know, a few days together in Cairo. But obviously Robbie has been, you know, a very important person for me to connect with the FAI and getting into the course here.
And what are your memories of kind of yourself and Robbie and Spurs together? Would you have got on well together? I mean, you would have overlapped obviously your time at White Hart Lane. So did yourself and Robbie get on well together?
Yeah, absolutely. Robbie is a great guy. I mean, we spent time at Tottenham. We spent time at in LA, and obviously he's a great leader. He's a great guy, and Still, nowadays we text each other, and obviously we talk sometimes.
Well, just in terms of your own career, I mean, obviously you're retired now. Looking at Chelsea at the moment, is it kind of a little bit strange looking at this Chelsea football club the way it is now? Maybe a little bit different to perhaps when you started out on loan there in 1999, 2000, and then obviously went on to have 9 years there. It seems to be quite a different club there now from when you were playing there.
Well, to be fair, yeah, maybe the first couple of years, but then, you know, I was there when Abramovich got to Chelsea, so I witnessed the big change that that club had when Abramovich got involved in it. But obviously, you know, as a club that's been successful, you know, not only in the last 4 or 5, 6 years, it's been successful since even before I was there. So obviously, with Mr. Abramovich in charge, they, you know, they were able to spend a bit more money and get you know, better players, great players in the team, and you know, nowadays we have example of teams that maybe they spend a lot but they're not able to win. So it's not only about spending, it's about organizing club, organizing a team, get the right people, and obviously Chelsea is doing that in years now.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
That was Carlo Cudicini a little bit earlier this afternoon. Yeah, a bit of a surprise one when you think about it. But Noel King obviously said the magic words, and in he came. It'll be interesting to see how he gets on.
Yeah, it's great to have that experience. You need that.
Yeah. Never said about Liverpool over the weekend. Did you watch United take them apart limb by limb?
Dead air.
Shall thankfully, we move on, Gary?
Thankfully, my daughter, my beautiful little daughter Holly, was Irish dancing at a fish.
So you missed it.
And she won.
Oh, brilliant.
And Liverpool didn't. So it was a great day to be a daddy.
Are you
and a shocking day to be a Liverpool fan?
Are you already ringing up Michael Flatley saying, listen, here, Riverdance contract? Are you the pushy parent?
Sorted.
we spoke about it last night.
There was a hilarious thing on one of the skits on Stephen Gerrard, one of the captions from The Simpsons, where the guy just walks in, puts his hat
do, up, do, 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 do,
turns around, walks back out.
Okay, Gary's going to stay with us. We're talking golf in about 15 minutes time, and after the break we're talking to Barry Geraghty. Stay tuned.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Now, you're very welcome back. A quick reminder of our Aviva Fan Studio on Thursday night. As I mentioned, brilliant guests Mark Kinsler, Graham Kavanagh, Alan Cawley, Brian Kerr, and a few drinks. Interesting chat about the weekend coming up and the game against Poland on Sunday at the Aviva Stadium. So if you want to get involved and be there, 51552 and let us know. We'll stick you down for a couple of tickets. Now, ahead of their crunch match tonight, well, it's a crunch match for a couple of different reasons, but chief among them because both teams in pretty good form at the moment. Bohemians hosting Dundalk in the Artistry League Premier Division, 7:45 kick off even at Dennymen Park, and John Kenny is there. John, two teams, as I said, in good form, and an interesting this one. How do you see it going?
Yeah, not only Bowes and Dundalk, Hugh, the only two teams with 100% records after the opening three games. They've also managed to keep three clean sheets as well. Therefore, the unfancied Bowes occupy the top spot, having scored one more goal than Stephen Kenny's side. So a great start for the new Bowes manager, Keith Long. Difficult week for him in his short Daly Mount career. They face the champions tonight and then Shamrock Rovers on Friday night. He's blended those players, though, who have stayed here at Daly Mount Park and not followed Owen Heary to Sligo with the players he's brought in himself. And thus, so far, it's worked. Unlikely, though, they can continue with their winning vein for a long amount of title challenge, but Dundalk won't be taking the Gypsies lightly tonight. Bowes making one change from the side that beat Bray over the weekend, with Robbie Creevy in for Keelan Dillon in midfield, and Dundalk can change from the win over St. Pat's. Do you want me to mention the other games tonight?
Might as well do that.
Yeah, 7:45 starts to all the games tonight, bar one. Elsewhere, third place Shamrock Rovers travelling to the Showgrounds to face Sligo Rovers. Cork City against Galway United, who picked up their first win of the weekend against Drogheda. Drogheda themselves at home to Limerick, and an Inchicore repeat of last season's cup final. St. Pat's meeting Derry at Richmond Park. And the 8 o'clock kickoff is Longford Town hosting the bottom club Bray Wanderers. All else, as I say, kicking off at 7:45. Good anticipation tonight. Hopefully get a decent crowd and hopefully get a decent match here at Daly Mount as well.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks a million, JK. Brilliant stuff, as always. John Kenny there at Daly Mount Park. We're turning our attention to racing, though, and disappointing news for one of Ireland's top jockeys. Barry Geraghty suffered a hairline fracture on his left shin bone at Downpatrick on Sunday, which is going to rule him out for a couple of weeks at least. And Barry, I'm delighted to say, is on the line. Hey, Barry.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you. Listen, while we have you, Robbie wants me to get you to say live on air that you will commit to coming to the Aviva fan studio at some stage over the next month.
Well, a bit more time in my hands anyway, so I might have to squeeze it in.
Super, yeah. Listen, what happened on Sunday?
Yeah, I rode Sailor's Warning in a conditions hurdle in Downpatrick, and we were challenging going to the second last, and he came up on an early stride, and we crashed out, and I'd say the two of us were tumbling across the ground. I'd say he gave me a little kick on the shin, and that was the damage done.
Did you get the shot of pain and think straight away this is bad, or did you not realise until he got in?
Yeah,
I thought at first
it was bad, and then as I got my boot off, I was you know checking the bone. I couldn't feel there was one point where there was a you know damage done, and so I was trying to convince myself I was okay. But by the time I got back down to Blanchton Hospital on the third X-ray, they found a fracture straight across the shin bone. So that was the end of Aintree and Fairy House.
Yeah. I know, and so what is the prognosis? I mean, in terms of when you could be back, Barry, I mean, Punchestown is, 4 or 5 weeks away now. Is that a target, or what?
Well, that'd be hopeful. Punchestown's 5 weeks away today. I was in my surgeon, Paddy Kenny, in Blanchestown this morning, and he put me in a full cast, which he said he'd take me out of in 2 weeks, put me into a cast up to my knee, you could say, and be in that for another 2 weeks, and he'll assess me then, with a view to hopefully getting back for Punchestown.
Now, I suppose there's nothing you can do but just sit and wait. I mean, there's nothing, this kind of injury, you just have to let it heal, do you? Like, there's nothing you can do to speed up the process.
No, only, you know, obviously, you know, you try and rest as much as you can. You know, diet, supplements, do anything you can do to improve it. Sean Boylan is sending me over a remedy, I believe. So,
oh, really?
That might give a little boost, yeah.
I met him recently at a wedding, and in brilliant form as always. Like, are you a reasonable patient, Barry, or are you a bit cranky when things like that happen?
Thankfully, I haven't had, I've had my share over the years, but not so much in recent years, and it's the first time I've missed Cheltenham or Aintree, one of the big meetings like that. So it's, you know, you have to take it on the chin. You're dodging bullets all the time, so you're going to get hit by the odd one.
Is it 15 years in a row you've ridden at Aintree, is that right?
In the National, yeah. So yeah. It would have been nice to keep that up, but sure, hopefully I'll be back again next year.
Yeah, okay. Just looking back, I suppose, over the last couple of weeks, are you happy overall with how Cheltenham went, or do you think there was a couple of rides that got away?
No, it's always very hard to get winners, and I'd say even this year was harder again, especially with all the firepower that Willie Mullins brought over. Like, I was riding all English horses for Nicky Henderson, and another winner for Neil Mulholland, who's from the north. So I got a winner the first day, and you know, to get a score on the board is massive, and you know, at least you're not going home empty-handed, so it takes a bit of pressure off you. You can enjoy it and sit back a little bit, but you know, I had a good winner down on the side in the train for Nicky, which was nice too. So no, it's hard. It's hard grafting Cheltenham, and a lot of people coming home empty handed, so it's important to get a winner there, and it's obviously great when you do.
Myself and Gary were together in the GOAT watching the first day, and we both had the Drew's nephew backed, and we were roaring you up that hill, and it was just brilliant. And I was thinking that'll kind of settle you down for the rest of the week. But as you say, then on reflection, you know, even looking at McCoy as well retiring, and you know, winners are so hard to come by. What Willie did was just a freak occurrence, nearly.
Well, it is, but you know, the strength and depth he has, the amount of horses had the first three home in the Champion Hurdle, like, they were all well fancied, you know, and to have the good novices on the Silver Tour. You know, he's just got a massive amount of talents. He's doing a brilliant job with them. Obviously, Ruby is a massive part of that riding them, and Paul Townend and all the backup team. Like, it's the operation has just grown and grown and grown, and you know, they are the leading force in jump racing.
Yeah, can I ask Barry? Yeah, Gary wants to come in there.
Barry, just a quick question. Would there be a little bit of frustration with the other trainers to see that, you know, one guy is getting so many good young horses, or is it? Is it kind of just the way it's fallen at the moment?
Well, I suppose, you know, he's picking them up at a young stage. He's buying them, and he's producing them. You know, a lot of trainers could come across these horses, but just mightn't get them to the same heights that they're getting to. But you know, Willie's doing brilliantly.
In terms of, you know, Davy Russell very well, Barry. Can you understand the decision by Jim Cullity to pull someone like Davy off Lord Windermere and other rides in the stable? It seems nonsensical to us here, if you don't mind me saying, but you know, for someone who's just a model professional, still obviously a top jockey, as Cheltenham proved yet again, it just seems a very bizarre decision.
I didn't get to study the race, to be honest, but you know, Davy, from what I've been told and what I saw, would have ridden a similar race to what he rode last year, and yeah, obviously it was a different result this year. It was a bit surprising, but you know, Jim obviously had his reasons, but no, it wasn't, it wouldn't be obvious to me.
Yeah, okay. Listen, before I let you go, I have to ask you how Sprinter Sakura is. Do you know, obviously I know Nicky Henderson was asked yesterday, and maybe it's just too soon to know, but how is he?
Well, he's okay, come on, it's fine. Like, he pulled up, the horse pulled up perfectly fine, but just on the day he was choking going down the back straight. He didn't feel right. The ground was a good bit deader than it was in Ascot, but whether he's some underlying condition that hasn't come to the fore yet, we'll have to wait and see. But the horse is fine, he's well. I suppose he's going to get him checked out, I'd say, this week in Newmarket, and we might know more then. But he ran so well in Ascot, and he split the first two home in the Champion Chase that day, and you know, we felt then there was a lot of improvement in him. So whether he's gone by at this stage or whether there's something just amiss on the day remains to be seen. You know, it's tricky enough, but you know, he ran well enough in Ascot to suggest maybe there is some little bit of hope there.
Okay, just before I let you go, Henry Shefflin, press conference tomorrow, and you know, I suppose all the talk is that he's going to announce his retirement after an incredible career. Someone like him, words hardly kind of to put it into context what everything he's achieved, but we had Eddie Byrne on earlier to say what a pleasure he was to play alongside someone to watch like that. Barry, from your own perspective?
Oh, for sure. Like, he was so clinical, you know, and for years to be at the top, and he always look at those really good players. They seem to have so much time on the ball. Everything just happens so easy for them. It's like a good horse. It just, it there's a flow and there's grace, and you know, he was just such a classy player. He's the best I've ever seen anyway.
Okay, look, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for your time, Barry. And listen, we will get you onto the old studio soon enough.
Cheers, you.
Thanks, man. Barry Garrity there. Unfortunately, as I say, he's not going to be around at Aintree or Ferry House, but hopefully we'll get back for Punchestown. Gary, can you explain why, well, leave that for the golf. Hugh Ree Henry, hard to compare players of different eras, but surely he must be up there as the greatest. Ring Mackie Doyle, all have their place at the top table. So does Henry, deservedly so, says David in Cork. Yeah, well said, David. We'll take a quick break back after these.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
You're very welcome back. 51552 for your text at Game on 2FM on Twitter. Gary Murphy is obviously still with me in studio. Henrik Stenson, Gary, what happened to him?
He got put on the clock, got out of his routine.
Would you stop now?
Got
come
a bit
on.
Panicky. It's a nightmare. Absolutely. It happened to me quite a few times, and I didn't consider myself to be a slow player, but if you're in a group with a guy who's slow and you know you're not slow and you practice your routine and you know how far or how long it takes you to hit the ball, you still get out of kilter, and it's really off-putting. I played in Munich on the 11th hole in the BMW. My playing partner was in the trees doing a kind of Robin Hood impression, chopping the place down, slowing the play up. And what happens when you get time? The first guy gets, say, 50 seconds, then 45 and 40. So he was chopping his way up the hole. I was on the green. Long story short, or to make a long story even longer, I was last putt. I had a birdie putt from 10 feet, and I took 50 seconds to hit it. I was allowed 40. Referee came over. I'd had a bad time in Wentworth 2.5 months previous to that on the 13th hole, which I completely argued with the referee. It was a 7-iron, 165, so there was no decision to make. Just club out, bang, hit it on the green. Guy came over, said I had a bad time. So that bad time carried forward onto Wentworth, and because of that second bad time, I got fined $4,000.
Ouch.
Now, it was the guy in the trees that was slowing things up. So we were out of position. So Stenson's match, the pace of play, you just have to keep up with the match in front.
Well, here's the question, and it's coming in from a texter. Gary, can you explain why Stenson's group was put on the clock on the 15th hole in the final round? In the final group, who were they holding up? The PGA did the same with Harrington and Woods a few years back, and it totally screwed with Harrington. 2-3 putts later, I think the same happened at Stenson in Bay Hill. I haven't seen any US player in contention in the final round receiving a similar sanction. Is that fair to say?
It's not fair to say, because you can't let them be in the final group and play at their own pace. Like, yeah, everyone has to.
That's unfair
on the guys in front. So you have to keep up. If you don't keep up with the match in front, you go on the clock.
You see, there seems to be this conflict between the players that, A...
But they're all too slow. I mean...
Yeah. So therefore, hard, like, you know, play is too slow generally, and then B, the players all say, oh, yeah, it's too slow. Everything needs to be quicker. And then when one of them is put on the clock, they go mental about it.
Yeah, but the really frustrating thing is you play with a guy who's slow, and then you go on the clock and he starts playing quickly. And then you get out of your routine, and then you're looking around seeing the ref and you're like, am I being timed? And it really does put you off.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do.
A difference. But having said that, I mean, Stenson is long enough in the tooth to know, you know, he's not worried about a fine for $4,000. So he should have, he did get in his own way, but that happens. I mean, they're human. They're not robots out there. But he messed up. He should have won that golf tournament.
And you should have been 2-for-2 in your tips.
Yeah, but it's all very sad.
It is sickeningly sad. Yeah, I suppose, look, just someone like Stenson as well.
But there's a big problem with slow play. Even Harrington, as much as we love him, he's horrifically slow.
Yeah.
They take way too much time. It's shocking for kids watching because they're going to try copy that.
Yeah.
There's an Italian kid on tour, Paratori, who's come out. He's 18 years of age. He stands up, pulls the club out, puts it behind the ball and hits it. Game over. No practice swing, off you go. Because all you're doing, and it's a big thing for people playing, like your pre-shot routine is huge. I had mine down after getting fined, even though I thought it was unfair and it wasn't my fault. I went and changed my game and I started playing a lot. So just went out and practiced the routine, and it takes me from pulling the club out now, well, it takes me about a month to pull the clubs out now, but I had it down to 18 seconds.
Yeah.
And the big thing about that as well, especially on putting, David Frost, who's one of the greatest putters of all time, he had a great saying, if you're going to miss it quick.
Yeah.
You see guys, you especially see it in club matches, they're over there, and a great tip for putting is you put the putter behind the ball, you look at the hole, so you look down your line, looking at the hole, and as you're coming back to the ball, try to get the putter head back as quickly as possible. If you reduce that downtime between when you look back to the ball, worst thing in the world is to stand there and freeze for 10 seconds, because 10 seconds is like an eternity.
Yeah.
And it reduces the mad dogs barking in your head, basically.
Yeah.
But it's a huge problem. I mean, it's taken 4.5 hours for 3 professional golfers to play a round of golf. It's ridiculous. So you go with your buddies on a Saturday in a 4-ball, you'll get around 3.25 hours.
So one of the excuses I offered up for Stenson's group was because they were the last group, there was a big crowd and all the delays that go with that. But actually, that wasn't the case. McIlroy had the biggest crowd and they played the front nine in 2 hours. So that's no excuse.
Yeah, no, there is no excuse. Now, in fairness, at times it can, especially at the Open Championship, inside the ropes can be a circus with
sure, yeah,
gobshites like me running around trying to get yardages and whatnot. But I mean, it happens a lot, like in commentary, you're doing commentary and it goes to a certain guy to play. You know what it's like with producers, they have a certain amount of time to show that shot. And he's not even ready to go, and he can be there a minute and a half. looking at a guy doing nothing, and then you're flipping over and back, and it goes on delays. And
I sometimes wonder if TV producers just have red flags over certain players because they're like, just don't show them.
Yeah, Schlanger's incredibly slow player.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Ozzy, way ahead of his time, just on the basis of what you just said, because he never takes a practice swing. Now, he does lose on average 14 balls a hole. And he's nearly killed more people than he's actually held. But
he spends it at the other end looking for it.
Yeah, exactly. but just on Stenson, I mean, you look.
He's good. He's flying.
He is flying. So nothing to worry about?
No, not
okay.
at all.
McIlroy showed some good stuff. Form is coming back, but he still looked rusty. And that's his last tournament before the Masters. So why isn't he playing more?
I don't know. I'd like to see them all playing a lot more. Really, I think they're. It's funny. You look at Padraig when he was in top of his game, and he was down to playing three in a row. That was it, maximum. And then he was playing a lot. You know, and he started winning. I don't know. I don't think there's a science to it. And I think, to be fair to the players, they're still trying to work it out too. They don't really know. But I'd like to see them play a bit more.
But if you're coming off on Sunday, as McIlroy did, and you say, okay, yeah, definitely a lot better there, you know, lot to be happy with, stuff that I'm not entirely content with, do you just not change your schedule and then say, look, I'd like to play another tournament, maybe? It's all about competition.
See, the really important thing is it depends how well he can entertain himself when he's off tour practicing. That's the hardest part of it.
He can bloody entertain himself, great. Vegas, I mean, baby.
That's the hard thing, you know, to keep the motivation levels high, because, you know, when you're out there on your own practicing for 5-6 hours a day, you need to have really good structure and good imagination and make that practice really count. Just out there beating balls is no good. But that's what the funny thing is, he's taking 2 weeks off. He played the week before he won the Open.
Yeah.
You know, there's no real sign to his seat. I guess he just doesn't like Houston. Texas is probably going, this week's probably going to be a bit windy and grainy greens. He's on bent grass greens at Augusta. Although Houston is, they try set it up as similar as possible, but that's just what he's sticking to this year. He's going for the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
His form has been a bit slow in Florida, there's no denying that, but
it's not 5-1 form, let's put it like that.
No, it's not, but he's going to put on totally different greens to what he's been putting on the last couple of weeks as well.
True.
So it's not a huge indicator. And he's won already this year, and, you know, he's grand. I mean, I think if he plays the par fives half decent at Augusta and puts just a little bit above average, he's going to be very hard to beat.
Anyone who believes in karma might look at what happened at the Madeira Islands Open last weekend.
Just awesome. Absolutely. Ian McGregor is a caddy who died on the course last year on the Sunday, and he had a heart attack on the ninth fairway, and
they played on.
And they played on, and they should never have. And I think he was just tipping his little glass out over the clouds and got that rain to, you know, because it was bad form and hugely unfortunate for young kids, because that's where a lot of young players going over there with that week. That's their major, you know, and to get a washout, no one gets paid. They all lose money. They're going to reschedule it again for July. But it's, I have to say, Madeira is one of the nicest places I've been to. It's an absolutely fantastic island.
Really?
But the golf course is on the side of a hill. And it's just not, I don't think it's appropriate enough for a top European tour event. And they're going to go back there in July, and it's going to be really bouncy and fiery and tricky. It's a tough week. It's not the greatest event of all time, but it's, you know, an opportunity for young guys coming through, or maybe old guys to reinvent a career. And it's professional golf. Every week is a different week, and it's an opportunity. So got washed out. They're going to replay it again in July.
Okay.
And see where it takes them.
Have a think about your tips, if you will. We're going to change tack slightly, but Gary's going to stay with me and give us the tips for the weekend. And hopefully we'll all be going to join Rory McIlroy in Las Vegas. We're talking rugby, though, because at the fifth time of asking, Ross Gray won the Leinster Schools Senior Cup last Tuesday. They beat Belvedere in a pretty dramatic final. The games master of Ross Gray is Brendan McKeown, and he joins us on the line now. Brendan, I suppose you've had a few days. The dust has settled on this one. I imagine it's a pretty nice feeling to finally gotten over that line.
Yeah, look, we're very proud of the lads and very proud of everyone associated with the team. It's we kind of set out a document about 8 years ago to try and achieve this goal, and it probably mightn't have been taken serious by a lot of people, but we knew we had a lot of ability to work with in the school and a lot of drive among the coaching staff, so we're delighted to see that we've gotten here eventually.
So what about this bunch of lads then was different than the previous, say, 7 or 8 years since the document was set out? Were they the most talented? Were they better coached? Better application? What was it?
I think we've had an awful lot of talented boys come through the school in the last 7 or 8 years. Look, part of it might be down to the structures in the school improving each year. Like, we've had excellent coaches over the senior teams for the last 4 or 5 years, and they certainly played a huge role in getting us to this stage. But I think, look, we in terms of a development structure, I think we just try to improve it each year, improve the conditioning, improve the diet, and I suppose we just maybe got a little bit of luck as well this year, and the players obviously took the opportunity when it presented itself.
A little bit of luck maybe, but I mean, I remember having a conversation with Tony Ward before the Cup started, and, you know, myself and him would go to quite a few matches, and he had seen Ross Cray a few times, and he mentioned that you were a team to look out for, that you seemed to have all the necessary ingredients this year to go to perhaps get further than you'd ever gotten before, and that was winning this tournament.
Yeah. Look, it's we always believed that from the start of the year. Now, we were pipped in the league final by an excellent Newbridge side, but we knew when we regrouped that we would be quite close again. I think a huge area of influence for us was the bench that we had available to us on the day. Now, I don't know if you saw the game or not, but
yeah.
But there was a great line break from Belvedere with 2 or 3 minutes on to go on the clock, and the two big tackles that came in were from Peter Gavin and Brian Diffily, and both of those had come off the bench and were fresh. And look, that's probably an area where we may not have had as much strength before, and that played a huge role, I think, in the minute percentages that you need to win such a high level competition.
Incredibly, I mean, 6 of the team were 6th year students, and
yeah.
I'm thinking back, it's not altogether that long since I left school, but it doesn't feel like it anyway. But you know, to have that few amount of guys at the final stage, if you like, and physically the most developed, if you like, because they would be the older lads, to win a tournament like this, it makes it all the more remarkable for me.
Yeah, possibly. Look, I even find it hard myself, Hugh, to be honest, when you're walking around the corridors in the school and you're basically looking up at these guys who are 15, 16 years younger than you. I think the strength and conditioning and the physical capabilities of these boys now has just progressed so much over the last few years, and it is a big part of the game. But at the same time, look, we're certainly very conscious of the fact that it's a skills-based game, you know, and you could have big, strong lads there, but I think it's a case of making sure that that's channeled in the right direction and that their ball skills, their handling, is the most important part of the game, and that's certainly what we try to focus on much more.
So what is involved in that? I mean, can you give me an idea? You know, we speak a lot on the programme about the commitment of professional rugby players, football yeah. players, equally the professional lifestyle of GAA players. Now, what yeah. was involved from the students to commit to winning this Cup?
Well, look, I suppose we've two things to take into consideration. Like, the first would be the fact that we expect most of these guys to get 500 points and leave and start. So it really is a case of trying to get these lads to peak at the right time of the year. So from January on, they could train anywhere from 7 to 10 times a week. Now, that would include your 4 or 5 pitch sessions a week, which obviously would include a game. You'd have 2 gym or conditioning sessions, and then you'd also have maybe a video analysis session, blackboard session, and you'd obviously use the pool for cool down sessions as well. So it is very intense for 3 months, and we really try to focus on the January to March period, and you know, we like to try and get the boys to have a good base in their academics from the September to December period. So it's about, I think, peaking at the right time. And I think we got it right this year anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. Peter Swainpool, what's he like? What kind of a coach is he as well, Brendan?
Peter's a great fella. Like, there's four coaches, actually. Peter Swainpool, Rob Dempsey, John Moylan and Johnny Burns. And look, they're very balanced in their dealings with the boys. They, I think they push them as much as they can in terms of their rugby development. Like, the lads want to be pushed and the lads want to achieve their potential, but I think they've got a good balance in terms of realising that these lads are still 16, 17, 18 years old. But look, they're very committed. They're not in it for anything else. I think only the love of the game. And I think they're very fortunate too that they built on a structure that was put in place too by John Lillis and Alan Tynan. But look, he's a fantastic coach, and all four of the coaches did a wonderful job with the team this year.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.